Okay, we're going to start tonight. We won't finish this, but we'll start talking about girls, and this will bleed over into the first section tomorrow, which I've kind of planned for that. I took a little bit of extra time talking about boys, and that's not because boys are more important, but I think boys are at great risk in our culture today. And because if our sons don't get it right, our daughters will suffer, right? If our sons don't get it right, our daughters will suffer. We're going to talk about girls now and ask the question, you know, how do we raise girls to be women? I have three girls, but it certainly doesn't make me an expert on raising girls to be women. I am not a woman. But I will tell you what I think the scriptures say. And we've said that the calling of manhood is to be a servant Lord, a servant leader. The calling of womanhood is to be a servant helper. And that just comes straight from Genesis chapter 2. Adam is alone. It's not good for the man to be alone. God says, I will make him a helper fit for him. Eve is made for Adam. She is made to be someone who is like him, but different than him, a helper fit for him. It's a word that just simply means corresponding to him, literally according to the opposite of him, so that she fits well with man. She's made in the image of God, but she's made differently than Adam, and she fits him perfectly for the task to which God has called them. And so woman was created to be different than man, but to correspond to him. This is often what's called a complementarian view discussions on gender. And so she's perfectly created to be the relational companion to man. Woman is ezer, helper, and theologians point out the fact that this is not a demeaning calling because God calls himself ezer, helper. Listen to this. The Lord is seen as the helper of the underprivileged, the poor, Psalm 72, the fatherless, Psalm 10. The psalmist confesses that he has no help but God. He is conscious of the divine assistance at a time of illness. God helps him in his illness. At a time of oppression by enemies, at a time of great personal distress, God's hand and his laws were sources of assistance or help to the psalmist. In other words, God is a helper, and woman, as she fulfills this role of servant helper, she is displaying what God's qualities are like, what his character is like. And so what does it look like for her to be servant helper? Well, let's turn to Proverbs 31. It is the typical passage that is looked to. Proverbs 31, 10 to 31. We don't have time to read this tonight, but let me say a few things about womanhood. Servant helper is designed by God for several things. One is to use her abilities to help others, as we've just been talking about. The question is presented in verse 10, an excellent wife who can find? So the writer is looking for the excellent wife, and look how she's described. The heart of her husband trusts in her. He will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of his life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She's like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her handmaids. She considers a field and buys it. She dresses herself. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. She puts out her hand to the distaff. She opens her hand to the poor. She's not afraid of snow for her household because her household are clothed in scarlet. She's making bed coverings. She's doing all these things, right? This is like Rachel Ray on caffeine pills. But you've probably been told, probably learned that Proverbs 31 is an acrostic poem. In other words, from A to Z, these are the kinds of things that a woman does. It's far too much for any one woman to do, but these are the types of things that a woman does. And the point is not that she can do everything, femininity is not a list of duties. It is a disposition. And the disposition is, I will use all that I have, all of my gifts, my resources, my talents, my time, for the good of others. I will help others. I will empower others. And so she acts in ways that are determined by what the need is. What are the needs of the people around her? That's why one wife might fulfill slightly different functions in the home than another wife, because their husbands are different, their needs are different, their children are different, where they live is different. So it's not a particular list of duties. A couple of implications of that. One, she is competent. She's able to do things. She's strong. She's tough to get things done. In many ways, my wife is far more tough than I am. I could never shoot a bowling ball out of my nostril. I could never stay up and take care of children all the ways that she takes care of children. A lot of the things that she does requires toughness, strength. Girls learn toughness. They ought to learn toughness. And they ought to learn to use their abilities, their time, their resources to help the family. We've always had chore lists for our kids. Sally came up with an idea a couple of years ago, I think it was, to say, you know, not only here's your list of chores, but you think of ways that you can help the family. What one thing can you do to help the family today? And kind of put it on them to think through that. So girls need to be trained to be competent, to have skills, knowledge, ability. Now, some girls actually intimidate guys. They are so competent that they intimidate the boys around them. The solution for your daughter is not to dumb down her abilities. It's not to make her less than what she is so that guys feel better about themselves, but it's rather to use her talents for his good. So he doesn't feel like he's being threatened by her, but rather he feels like he's being empowered by her. Women are crafted to want to be helpful and to know that their efforts are actually making a difference. That's an important part of it, too. They need to know that their efforts are actually making a difference. And we need to communicate that to them. So she's competent. She's also nurturing. Verse 12, she does him good and not harm all the days of her life. So her words and her actions are calculated to encourage, bless, and nurture. Now, men are called to be cultivators and nurturers, but men do it differently than women. The other day, Sally was babysitting an infant from our church, and she called me up after the baby went home, and she was sharing with me all the things that the baby did and what happened and how much she ate, you know, how many ounces of formula she ate and when she went down and when she woke up. And I said, "You really wanted me to be excited about all this, didn't you?" We nurture differently. Women do it in a very soft fashion, gentle fashion, but their orientation is towards care and concern for others, a way that makes others feel cared for. This is also a particular challenge for girls because girls are, you know, boys are called to a task. They're more task-oriented. And as I said before, they deal with the question, am I good enough? Am I competent? Girls are called to a relationship. They're servant helpers within relationships. And they struggle with, am I loved? Am I accepted? Girls deal with things like jealousy and envy a whole lot more than boys do. Those kind of issues just sort of roll off a boy's back, but not for a girl. They're like daggers in the heart. They struggle with that sense of insecurity within relationships. And because of that, it's a challenge for them sometimes to nurture and care for people who are a threat to them. And our girls need to have such security in Christ, in Jesus that they're able to care for, nurture, and bless even the people that they feel threatened by, the people who make them feel insecure, because their security is in Jesus. And so she is called to use her abilities to help others, but also she is called to live under loving and protective headship. Adam was created with authority over Eve. Mentioned before that he named her as an act of authority. We're told very clearly in Ephesians 5:22, wives are to submit to their own husbands as to the Lord. We're also told a few verses later in Ephesians 6:1 that children are to obey their parents in the Lord, for this is right. Now, women were designed to live under good, loving, encouraging, nurturing headship their whole lives. From the time that they are young and they live under the headship of their father till they take a husband and they live under his headship. And even if they don't get married for a long period of time or never get married, they're still, in a sense, under the headship of their father, not in a suffocating sort of way that they can't sort of stretch their wings as an adult woman, but he still has care for her. He is still called to watch out for her. And so women are to learn how to come under that kind of headship. In other words, women are designed to flourish under biblical, loving headship. And it's within that headship that a woman should feel safe, secure, and free to express her individuality and her gifting. Because she knows that she's loved, she knows she's protected, she knows that she is affirmed. In other words, women will be most fruitful when they learn to live under that protective headship and they're given freedom to flourish and they're nurtured and cultivated and encouraged. So what does that mean? It means two things. One, her security is to be found in authority over her. Now that's a contrary statement in what the world is telling our daughters today. Isn't it? There's two primary ways that women seek to have power. It's by being an object of beauty, and it's by accomplishing things. And that's actually found here in our text. He says in verse 29, many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful, beauty is in vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. This passage confronts head on this drive to be an object of desire. Now that's, in one sense, a very natural biblical thing, because what did Adam do when he got up and he saw Eve? Wow, bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. Not only did Adam delight in her, but Eve must have delighted in the fact that Adam delights in her. And so in one sense, girls are made to be delighted in, but not in the distorted way that sin has caused. And so what happens is, you see here, charm is deceitful. Charm is what you use to manipulate and to be in control. That's how the word is being used here. When women or girls feel insecure, they oftentimes try to use charm. They try to manipulate. They try to get their way. They try to organize the events of their lives and the people in their lives in such a way that now I feel secure. Things are the way that I want them, and I feel better. The other is beauty. Happy to hear one of our high school girls, had a group of high school students in our home a few weeks ago, and one of the high school girls was talking about, because we were talking about setting a good example for younger girls in the church, she says, you know what, I look back at the things that I wore 2, 3, 4 years ago, and I'm just ashamed. I can't believe that I wore that stuff to church. Why do girls do that? So that other people will look at them and think they are beautiful. This text also, I think, challenges the teaching or the notion that you Prove yourself by what you can do, what you can accomplish. Verse 29 says, many women have done excellently. A lot of women have climbed the ladder. Women are climbing the corporate ladders, political ladders, doing all sorts of things. You know what the text says? Many women have done those things. So what? Where does it get them? Are they more secure in the end? This woman has surpassed them all because she fears the Lord. Women are gifted to do lots of things. Women can have leadership positions. I'm not denying any of that. I have a daughter who is very much wanting to be in a position of leadership wherever she goes. We were in Greenville a few years ago. I think she was five. We were down in Reedy River area. And a few weeks before this, one of our deacons in our church, you know, said to me, he said, you know what, I think by the time she's in second grade, she's going to be running that school. Well, here she was. We're down in the Reedy River Park, and she's looking up all the buildings in Greenville. It's beautiful. And she just looks up at me and says, you know what, Dad? One day I'm going to be running this place. In other words, I want to be in charge. Girls definitely have abilities in leadership and exercise leadership in biblical ways, but it can be twisted into an effort to establish themselves. And so fathers and later husbands need to draw out from our daughters and our wives a sense of security in good and right authority. Without the affirmation and protection of male authorities in their lives, there will be a void created in our daughters' hearts that will go looking for approval and affirmation from the kinds of people and the kinds of things that we don't want them seeking after, and they will end up being victimized. Let's not set our girls in a lifelong quest to find security in something other than the good biblical authority that God has ordained for them. You know, I think girls first learn this by watching mom. By watching mom and dad. Is dad a good loving authority over mom? And is mom willingly submitting to dad and following his lead? If mom is challenging dad all the time and doing things contrary to dad's designs and wishes, what is she going to grow up thinking? She's going to grow up thinking, well, that's what it means to be a woman. Challenge the authority. And so our girls need to see that it is actually freeing to live under this kind of authority, and that that's where they will flourish the most because they will feel the most safe. Another thing that it means is that a girl's calling is to affirm and empower the authority over her. Verse 23 says it this way. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. So here's her husband in this position of authority, and he is well respected. And what she has done is she's used everything that is hers, all of her energies, all of her gifts, all of her abilities and talents, all of her resources to empower him so that he can go do his job, so that he can do his duty, so he can fulfill his calling as a servant Lord. She elevates, she empowers. She doesn't seek to emasculate the man in her life, but affirms and empowers his leadership. Now this is, you might say, mostly to be true in the two primary arenas in which women are to follow the leadership of men, and that's in the home and in the church. But it's a little more confusing these days for girls to try to figure out how to answer the question, how can a woman affirm and empower male headship, male leadership in society in general? Well, came across this the other day. Sally and I were watching a news segment of a girl or a woman by the name of Jen Welter. She's the first coach in the NFL, or at least she was for the preseason for the Arizona Cardinals. So she was hired by the Arizona Cardinals during the preseason as the first coaching intern in the NFL, and she worked with the outside linebackers. She had actually played in an all-female league. I didn't even know they had those sorts of things. But she ended up receiving very positive reviews from the players who really liked her. And it was interesting what they spoke about. They did respect her football knowledge and ability, but there was something in particular that she brought to the table, and it was femininity. Before the first preseason game, she wrote personal notes to the outside linebackers and put them in their locker. And the players, when they were interviewed, said, "You know, this is the first time anybody has ever thought of me as a person." You know, you get hurt and a male coach says, "Look, rub a little dirt on it, get back in the game," right? But here she is in her femininity. Even though she's their coach, she is empowering, she is elevating, she is lifting them up to be better than what they were before. Even in that, a woman can be feminine and fulfill the calling that God has given to her to be a servant helper. One last thing here, and I'll just leave it with this and we'll stop tonight, and that is to find her identity in the Lord. Find her identity in the Lord. That's what verse 30 says. Charm is deceitful, beauty is in vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Her orientation is towards the Lord. Jesus is enough for her. He is her refuge. He is her strength. She doesn't need to look for it anywhere else. In him, she has a sufficiency. And so rather than chasing all the things that the world chases, she says, "I will let Jesus define me as a woman. What he declares about me, what he declares to me as my calling, that's what I will fulfill, and that's what I will trust." And so she finds her identity in the Lord.